I know her name, but I don't think they've said it yet.
Is it Bubba?
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, it's another Geeky Boners episode. We talk about Buttonumathon, a new comic that just came out, and Molly's small but plentiful boners.
I'm so hard right now.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by Molly.
Hi.
And Tim.
Hi.
And this is another Geeky Boners episode.
Boing, 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 boing. I got it right this time.
You did, yeah. Although, Tim, if I was going to assign your boner noise, it would probably be a sad trombone sound.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. Slime.
Yeah. So
my boner goes, kazow.
Boosh and or cacao. Yeah. We're going to talk about what's turning our nerd cranks. Tim, why don't you get us started? Is there anything in particular that's got you going?
Yeah, I went to Buttonumathon again this year.
Yeah.
We talked about it last year. I'll talk about it every year that I get to go. But
yeah,
it was just as amazing as always. It kind of sucked because I go for about a week, and this year because of some work frustration, I had to leave Friday evening. And Buttonumathon starts Saturday at noon. So I left Friday really late, and I had to come home Monday.
Did you have to work that Monday?
No. Okay. I came home Monday night. But I still, usually we leave Wednesday night and come home Tuesday.
And it's in Austin, Texas.
So what you're saying is your routine was disrupted.
My routine was disrupted.
Oh, no.
I like Buttonumathon a lot, but I also like hanging out with my friends down in Austin that I don't get to see.
Plus it's an escape from, you know, this weather, this state.
And so you know, it was like you get down there and you just crash right into Buttonumathon. So, you know, I got down there Friday night, basically had a chance to go to a new ramen noodle place down there, which is so good. It has like a line that's like a 30-minute wait just to get inside.
Good for them.
To order your ramen. And it was really good. And then went to bed, and the next morning you get up and you go into Buttonumathon.
So you just crash right into that Buttonumathon.
You just crash right into the movies. I actually slept through two movies this year because I just didn't have a chance to catch up on sleep. But it's all right. One of them was Popeye, so...
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Did you go into Buttonumathon dry, or would you say that you went in there a little bit lubricated?
I don't ever
just crashed right in. So you just crashed in dry.
You just went in right into Buttonumathon dry.
Yeah, I crashed in dry. So,
that's rough.
One thing I'm going to highlight just because I think it's probably not on... Yeah, whatever. All right. They're bumping because they're making dry humping jokes. All right.
Dry anal sex jokes.
Anyway. One movie that I saw that I'm going to...
I mean, rape jokes, really.
Well.
We saw The Hobbit, and I'm not going to talk about...
The new one. Yeah. Desolation. I'm super excited to see... All I want to know is could you tell it was Bandersnatch? And did you like his performance as Smaug?
It's Cumberbatch.
Could I tell it was Cumberbatch? Yeah. Yes, because I knew it was Cumberbatch.
Right.
And did I like his performance as Smaug? That is such a complex answer that I don't feel like I should.
Okay, that's good.
Because you guys haven't seen it yet.
No, but I have spoken to one, Jeremy Stomberg, mentioned you again, and he gave me his take on it, which I will share with you later.
So Cumberbatch did the voice of
Smaug,
Angel Islington in the new Neverwhere radio show.
Yeah.
And as soon as I was like, oh shit, he's going to be doing Smaug, I was like, well, it's probably going to be like the same voice. It's this huge, evil, rumbly.
There's a lot more post-production on his voice in this
one. Interesting.
He also does the voice of the Necromancer.
Yeah, right.
Mm. So there's multi-Cumberbatch.
What else did you see?
We saw the new Scorsese film.
Oh, God, I want to see that.
The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see that.
It's really fucking awesome.
He's never disappointed.
It's fucking hilarious. I mean, you don't expect comedy from Scorsese, and I would say 75% of this movie is comedy. And awesome. Leonardo DiCaprio, much better physical comedian than you might have imagined.
How was Jonah Hill
Jonah Hill's really good. Jonah Hill's really good. That was probably my second favorite movie of the entire event. My favorite movie was a classic movie. It was The Agony and the Ecstasy, which is the story of Michelangelo painting the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah, cop out.
What?
Because you're picking not a new movie? You can't say your favorite movie is Stop Buttonomathon is some 30-year-old movie.
Sure it is. It's my favorite. I like old movies, fucker.
No, no, that's fine. I'm just saying, like... Like, when someone says, what was their favorite thing you saw at Buttonomathon, you kind of have the expectation that they're going to say some new thing.
Or they hadn't seen before.
Right. Or they said they hadn't seen before.
I hadn't seen it.
Oh, you hadn't. Okay. Well, that's...
Oh, okay. And, never mind.
And it was in 70mm. And 70mm, if you get a film that was shot in 70mm and you can watch it in 70mm, I mean, it's fucking awesome. So, it's just... I mean, it's huge. It's clear. The subject matter is about... the painting of the Sistine Chapel and faith, so I didn't totally get into that. But it's Rex Harrison and Charlton Heston with a great script that just... The two of them play off each other so well.
That's a gay sexual tension.
Oh my God, there was so much gay shit going on in that
movie. There's a lot of gay... Whenever Charlton Heston's in a movie, there's a lot of gay sexual tension. I know,
that my favorite thing is that he never knows about it.
No.
If you ever heard
he doesn't understand the vibes he's putting off.
Yeah, Omega Man's super gay. Like, it's...
Like, literally in Ben-Hur.
Yeah.
Him and Masala, I think, is the name of the Roman dude.
Yeah.
But the thing is, that you know, you're like, oh, it seems like this? No, it's totally real. The dude who played Masala, the director and he were, like, talking, and they're like, we're not getting the right vibe from this scene. And the director's like, well, maybe you and Ben-Hur had a relationship when you were younger, and you really want to get that thing going again. And Ben's just not into it. He's just not...
That, and he didn't give any direction? He didn't clue in Heston on this?
They literally have this conversation, and then he says, but don't tell Chuck.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
So then you go watch the scene, and it's like so clear. One guy's playing... wants to start up the gay relationship again, and the other guy has no fucking clue what's going on.
To me, it's like the way Charlton Heston always puts off gay vibes in all of his scenes, but doesn't seem to realize it, is this, like when I was little, and we'd watch Liberace, and I didn't understand why women were like talking about how much they loved him and wanted to marry him, because even as a child, I could understand that he was fucking gay as like a $3 bill. Like, it was like, look at that guy, what are you talking? I didn't even know what gay was, but I knew he wasn't interested in ladies. I don't know how, but I just
So Michelangelo and the Pope clearly wanted to get it on.
Nice. Sure.
You could tell.
All right.
And
who doesn't want to fuck the Pope?
Yeah, exactly. He's hot. Hey, if he's Rex Harrison.
Oh, okay.
So, but it was and I had never seen it, and it was a really good movie. And there were some other movies that were okay. And we saw Popeye, and like I said, I slept through Popeye because
Robin Williams and what's her name from The Shining,
kind of boring.
What? Popeye's awesome. Popeye's awesome.
Two in the morning.
Maybe it doesn't hold up.
I really
liked it.
It's '80s. I don't remember.
I was a child, but
I never liked Popeye in general. So
Popeye's kind of lame, but Robin Williams is a decent.
Robin Williams plays a good Popeye.
Yeah, he was on cocaine still. So
right, that's
that.
How you know he's good. The cocaine.
Yeah,
you know this theory. He's
that Robin Williams is
Mork
funny.
Mork is funny, and Patch Adams isn't. I mean, there's a reason.
Yeah, right.
And it has nothing to do.
It depends. Really, what it is depends on how many times his movies have been stepped on.
That's
the less pure the movie is. Anyway.
I don't know. Movie geeks really love Popeye. I am a movie geek, and yet I've never been able to get into Popeye.
Were there any celebrity appearances?
Not really.
No.
Jackson didn't swing by and introduce
Mr.
The
Jackson
movie.
Did not show up.
Oh, Mr. Jackson, if you're
Mr.
nasty.
Jackson, yeah. No, Mr. Jackson, if you're nasty, did not show up to introduce the movie this year. The director of a movie called, Digging Up the Marrow? Who he directs the Hatchet movies. God, I can't remember.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Like the kids' survivalist books?
No. I don't think Hatchet. Hatchet's a serial killer.
Wrong Hatchet.
Oh.
Wrong Hatchet. Yeah.
He also directed a movie called Frozen.
I'm right there with you, though.
Yeah.
And
is Harry Knowles still fat?
Yes.
Okay.
Is his wife still Asian?
Yes. Okay. Yes, these things are true.
That's everything we know about Harry Knowles.
And Cargill still needs to cut his hair.
So, is that one guy still butthurt about that joke we made?
No, because he doesn't know you made it. See, that's all a secret.
I've wanted to go, but my main problem with it is the basic concept of being in a movie theater watching movies for 24 hours doesn't appeal to me. Yeah. So I mean, as much as I want to go for the friends and the seeing the things
Austin.
That are good, and I like Austin and the experience and all, a large part of me is like, I get uncomfortable after 2.5 hour movies of sitting still.
Well, you guys do intermissions and
there are breaks, but you take at least about a 10 to 15 minute break between every movie at least.
Yeah.
And there's nothing stopping one from getting up and leaving.
There are people who will just take a movie off and they'll just go out and hang out in the lobby and talk. But you know, if I hadn't have been asleep, I probably would have done that for Popeye. I gave Popeye a real honest chance.
Because that's gonna be me for every old movie that they decide we all need to see. I'm gonna be like, what is this in black and I'll just be like,
I'll like, I think we want to apply some here.
Yeah.
You know, you ought to. I think it'd be fun to have you guys come down.
We could record one down there.
It's a hard time of year for me.
We could. Well, it is. It is a hard time of year. I totally get that. But it is more about the people. You know, I love sitting in there and watching those movies.
Well, it's just like
movies.
Convergence. I mean,
yeah.
If you're going, most people I know aren't going to Convergence for any of the events. I mean, you're going because all the people you know are going to be there, and then there's the events.
And then there's some people that go entirely for the events. Yeah.
It's also about the shared experience. You know, the fact is that the way I saw Fellowship of the Rings and I saw it at BNet will always color my feelings about that film.
Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of cool. Turning movie watching into a group experience is really kind of cool, and it's not something that you get that often. I mean, I have really positive feelings about going to watch Star Wars Episode One that first time because, you know, as a Star Wars nerd, as a kid who grew up loving Star Wars, and this is your first Star Wars in 30 fucking years, and it's like, holy shit, we're getting new Star Wars, and you go in there and you're so excited and everybody's super jazzed to the point that you were so jazzed it took about 24 hours to really figure out what a shitty movie it was.
Yeah.
I will say straight up that I haven't seen it again since the first time I watched it, but I didn't think it was that bad, and then in hindsight it was only when people were like pointing stuff out and I'm like, I guess, but a lot of the things people don't like about the second trilogy, the first trilogy, whatever you want to call it, the prequels, is the political talking. And a lot of people are like, oh, it was too talky about political stuff, not enough space shooting. And I'm like, I enjoyed the political parts because I actually liked it.
I wouldn't mind that part if I didn't think the story was just fucking idiotic. And that's my basic problem. I get back to storytelling.
BNet was good.
BNet was awesome. So,
Tim, have you heard about the Machete Order?
The Machete Order?
Yeah.
For Star Wars?
No.
So the Machete Order for Star Wars is this guy was like, oh, I've got a kid. I don't know how to introduce my kid to Star Wars. You know, I watched them 4, 5, 6 because I was that age when they came out. So he's like, how do I introduce my kid to Star Wars? And so he came up with this viewing order, this idealized viewing order for watching to introduce a new person to Star Wars.
Okay.
And so you start with New Hope.
Uh-huh.
And then you go to Empire Strikes Back.
Uh-huh.
Which ends, as we all know how Empire Strikes Back ends, with kind of this like cliffhanger, Luke, I'm your father, hand cut off, huge downer. Skip Episode 1, go right to Episode 2, 3, and then do 6.
Huh.
And so what it is you're introduced to this villain. All of a sudden, Star Wars becomes not Luke's story, but Darth Vader's story. At the story of Anakin Skywalker, how there's this kid. You find out he's up against this mysterious dark villain.
You didn't see the first one.
And he cuts off Luke's hand, and I'm your father, and bam, flashback to him in Jedi training, and you get to see the rise and fall of Anakin Skywalker, and then all of a sudden it picks up with Return of the Jedi, and Luke's wearing all black. And all of a sudden, he's being more violent and aggressive. And you start to realize that maybe Luke is being set up for the same fall that his father did.
Maybe the Force is like a wheel.
Yeah. So it's super
that's
great.
That's actually a really good idea. I still think episodes 2 and 3 are shitty. Well, but I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
So,
what's your boner?
My boner?
Yeah, Nick, what's your boner?
Boner, Nick.
So
Nick, show me your boner.
On our way here.
No, seriously, though.
I swung by the Source Comics and Games near Tim, which is where we get our weekly pulls from. And I'm going through and I'm the stacks and picking out whatever they didn't put in our pull list and putting some things back. And I see a little hardcover book that I was not expecting to see, which is the fourth book in the Darwin Cooks adapted and illustrated Richard Starks Parker.
Yeah, you lent me the first three of those books, I read them in like a week.
Because they're fucking dynamite. Awesome. Yeah. So if you don't know, Parker is like a 60s crime novel written by Richard Stark.
I think we talked about it on here before.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we have.
Payback, the movie Payback?
Mel Gibson.
Is loosely based on it.
Payback is based on The Hunter and the Score. Or no, maybe The Score and the Outfit. The second and third, I think.
Payback is based on it the way that, like, the Sin City movie is based on, like, a couple of books kind of put together.
I think so. Like,
yeah.
So it's this guy who's a super professional criminal, like a bank robber or kind of like a Grand Theft Auto 5 type, where you're robbing banks or stealing jewelry or whatever the heist happens to be. But he's a consummate professional who's a big planner and only he takes no risks or as few risks as possible, and usually what the risks end up being are not so much the police or security, but the people he's partnered with tend to be the weak points or you know, betrayal, or that's where
the big problem is the other people that he's involved with
are not professionals,
not the actual heist itself,
right, with the exception of the Outfit, where he's almost single-handedly taking down a criminal organization that wronged him, which is amazing.
That's the one that I think Payback was loosely based on.
Some of it, yeah. So the first one was The Hunter, then The Score, then The Outfit, and this one's called Slayground, and I haven't read it yet, but the front...
Like Playground, yeah, but Slayground.
The front is like a carnival, like, shooting game, and Parker's, like, crouching in back behind with a pistol ready. And so Molly has this test for like a good book. It's like the Stephen King thing, right?
It's Stephen King, but it's a good test for any book. Is if the first line and or paragraph grabs you, read the book.
So the first line of this book is the mine had hit the armored car just right.
Boom.
So it like starts right in the middle of an armored car robbery, and The books are beautiful. They're these smaller hardcover books that when you take off the jacket, they're appealing to the eye with like a silhouette image. And
which is nice because I hate dust jackets.
Yeah.
I hate them.
And then the
they're,
pages...
They're really kind of annoying.
The pages are like a thick cream-colored like cardstock almost, and only black and blue ink.
Yeah.
In this one. So you get...
Kind of a cyan.
Yeah. And
very noir-y.
If you... Oh, you know, absolutely.
Well, I mean, Parker is a noir character.
But if you... Darwin Cook does a lot of, like, really blocky... He's known for his blocky DC characters. He did New Frontier, which if you haven't either read or seen the animated New Frontier, do so.
Yeah. New Frontier is a
that's him. Darwin Cook is New Frontier. So he loves contrast and simple, like a lot of geometric shapes in his illustrations, and so I'm very excited to go home and ignore my wife, and read this book. No, you'll be passed out on pain medicine.
No, but that's so. My boner is I have three boners and they're all very small.
Wow,
is the best way I can
three
go.
Three tiny boners, yeah.
Well, so
one
here's
big
the thing,
one.
Because
try boner.
So as you know. Valiant listeners, I hurt my back on the 30th, and what we now know is I had actually knocked my left sacroiliac joint out of place, and so it got knocked back into place, not by a chiropractor, because I don't believe in chiropractors.
I mean, you believe they exist, but...
I don't believe in any doctors whose medicine hasn't advanced since 1870-something.
Okay.
So I went to a physical therapist who just happened to, as she was doing something on my hip and shoulder, like, it just popped back into place, and she was like, oh, does that feel better? And it does, so that's great. But I've been on Percocet, Valium, and Flexeril for the last 2 weeks, pretty much around the clock.
Yeah.
And so I haven't been working, and I've been spending all my time flat on my back in bed. Literally not even able to watch TV. Like, all I can look at is the ceiling.
Yeah.
So.
But luckily, you've been asleep most of the time, so you haven't been that bored.
Most of the time. So, but what I've been doing is I've been doing a lot of thinking. And what I've been trying to think about is what I want. I try to read the Stephen King books I love the most, the really big, meaty ones.
Yeah.
You know, I try to read them now and then. I'm about due for another Dark Tower read through, but I'm going to wait a little while on that. But I want to. So, I was trying to decide what I want to reread. Between like some easy ones like Bag of Bones and some other ones, and as I was thinking about that, I started thinking about the fact that what I really want to do is I want to read a Stephen King book for the first time, if that makes sense. And so like my boner is this like unattainable idea I had while I was in like a fever dream of painkillers of like, wouldn't it be great if there was like a, like you could somehow just like go back and read a book for the first time again and just like experience that all
you
over.
You just have like a stroke.
I could hit you really hard.
You could hit me really hard. I bet you're big.
You just finished Dr. Sleep not long ago.
I did, and that was really, really good.
That's a sequel to
really good.
The Shining?
It's a sequel to The Shining, and it's really good. And I don't know. So that's my second mini boner is that idea. But
yeah.
Like the other thing is I've been listening. So I stopped listening to the Currents Morning Show on my drive in due to some rudeness I experienced on behalf of one of the DJs. And so as a result, I have decided that I just listened to my MP3 player on the way in, which is fine. But I've been listening to a lot of Zeppelin. And I had forgotten how much I just love. I mean, Led Zeppelin's tied for my favorite band with Nine Inch Nails. So it's I'd forgot. There's a lot of little songs I'd forgotten about that just here and there that come on. I mean, I know every word and I know every lick. I mean, I know every bit of it. And so it's been kind of fun, almost like rediscovering that part of my life, which was like my early college days is when I was really, really into that. And like 1920, 1921. So that's been another one. So like, unfortunately, because I haven't really been doing anything for the last 2 weeks,
Your geeky boner could be the anticipation of being able to like go running and stuff again.
I can't wait to go running again. I'm so sad that I bought all that. Although it's been balls ass cold here in Minnesota.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's been
like don't go outside dangerous.
Well, yeah. They call it unseasonably cold.
Yeah.
Which is because they can't say what the fuck is this.
Well, and
honestly,
usually we get this shit in like late January,
February.
Well, and this is my first year running during the winter. This is gonna be my ever.
Yeah.
Ever since I started running competitively. I started running competitively when I was 10 years old. I ran my first 5K, and ever since then, I have never run in the wintertime because I don't like it.
We need a fallow season.
And I needed a fallow season, so I'm trying this year to run a little bit just because I like the stress release. So I signed up for a 10K on January 1st because Nick has to work New Year's Day. So, and the PT is pretty positive that I'll be able to run again within a week, honestly. And, you know, she's like,
that's awesome.
But you'll be fine. You know, so that's good. So I don't know. I just have a whole bunch of little mini boners popping up all over like,
Almost like acne, crotch acne.
More like, oh God, I guess you guys wouldn't. So like when you're a girl and your boobs start to come in, the first thing that happens is you get this thing called a breast bud, which is literally like your nipple goes and just
like eraser heads.
Like there's like a marble sized lump under there now, and they don't always come in at the same time. So sometimes you're like going to your mom and you're like, and then she's like, it's okay, it's normal, it's fine. And then maybe you go to a Sting concert and you're wearing like a man's tank top and there's a picture of you with your arm around your brother and maybe it's showing and your mom's like, oh, Luke, you're getting breasts. And you're like, I'm going to die of embarrassment. And then she tells your estranged father and then he comes and picks you up for the weekend. And the first thing he says is, well, your mother tells me that I should probably buy you a box of tampons. pounds and you want to die. So that...
Not that that happened to you. That happened to somebody else.
It sounds so familiar.
It could happen, is what I'm saying. That could happen to a person who's super nice.
You need to write, like, the... Whatever the atheist equivalent of "Are you there, God? It's me, Molly." Like.
Yeah, because when I read "Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret," I was super confused because they talked about it was written in the '60s. Clips, they talk about the sanitary napkin belt. Because you used to have to wear a belt around your waist and clip it to the pads so that it didn't fall out of your... And I remember reading this and being like, what in the blue cheese? And going to my mom...
You have fucking exoskeletons.
My mom's like, oh, no. We have tampons now. No. But that was back when I had said that rather than get my period, I was planning on getting pregnant every 9 months so that I would never have to get my period because that sounded awful.
Yeah, because pregnancy is a lot less of an ordeal than a period, right?
Yeah. Awesome. Anyway, so those are my boners.
Yeah, my boners. Let me show you them. Have five answers to our five questions.
We do.
From
John Millar, from, it might just be pronounced Miller, but it's with an A.
Like Mark Miller. Mark Miller, right.
And he's also from Scotland.
Also Scottish, right.
Yes. Sweet.
So this Scotland. Is John Millar from Edinburgh, and he says, hello, in no particular order, to Molly, Nick, and Tim. But that's the order.
Oh. Sounds pretty particular.
Yeah.
Okay with this order, actually.
Yeah,
right.
But you are.
I'm gonna read his intro, because it's great. I'm a listener from Edinburgh, Scotland, and your podcast is easily my new favorite.
Oh, thank you.
I'm a semi-regular reader of Greta Christina.
Yay, and was turned friend of the show.
Friend of the show. And was turned on to your podcast by a post on her blog last week. That shows you how far behind we are in our questions.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Since then, I've listened to nearly all of your back catalog and have loved every minute of it. It's the perfect intersection of my two main interests. I confess a slightly childish love of bad language in my preferred media. There's nothing quite like an F-bomb to garnish an impassioned rant.
Fucking A, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Fuck that fucking shit. All right, so he now says, without further ado... So
our first
one.
Question is, what is the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days?
The best movie I've seen in the last 30 days is probably Return of the Jedi.
Ah,
yeah. Oh, there you go.
It's not the first time I've seen it, far from it, but it always seems to get overshadowed by its two forebears.
Hmm.
Of course, Star Wars is the original. I think he means A New Hope.
Ooh.
Oh.
And Empire is the best of the trilogy.
Yeah.
But the choice of which is best by no means is as clear-cut as it seems when you haven't seen Return of the Jedi for a long time.
Huh.
Those final scenes with Luke, Vader, and Palpatine are just as nail-biting and impressive as they ever were. All right, enough gushing.
Yeah, Ewoks, though.
Yeah, you know, the problem is, he's right. The scenes between Palpatine and Vader and Luke are fucking awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And we keep cutting between that and the fucking Ewoks.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And what, what did we... Get back to the duel.
Because it's for kids. Are you can't let it get too scary.
Are you an Empire man?
Empire Strikes Back is the best Star Wars film.
Molly?
I'm an Empire Strikes Back for the same reason as I love the second movie of a trilogy usually.
Yeah, right?
Because they let things get dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, let me say...
Hunger Games, man. Catching Fires was way better than the first one.
Let me say, I think Star Wars is possibly more fun to watch.
A New Hope
is possibly more fun to watch. I call it Star Wars because when I first saw it, it was just fucking Star Wars.
I find A New Hope, and always have found A New Hope, to be at times slow-paced and...
Really?
A little little bit like... I don't know, and maybe it's just that I've seen it enough times now.
It seems so short to me. A New Hope is like, it's like, what's the story of New Hope? A guy finds a droid, rescues a princess, and destroys the Death Star. I mean, that's the whole movie.
Dun-da-da, dun-da-da-da. Sorry,
I think I felt like...
Yeah.
And I felt like there's things that happen... All the good action happens off-screen.
Yeah,
like,
kind of.
Like, you know, all the really good, scary stuff happens, and they just kind of talk about it. And you're like, and that's kind of boring.
Yeah.
You know, like,
anyway.
It's intro to
We'll have to agree to disagree.
Yes. As we often do.
Question number two is geekiest, favorite atheist character.
Yeah. My favorite atheist character is Daria Morgendorfer from the eponymous TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
While she occasionally manages to outdo even me in the civic stakes, I really admire people who are clever, people who are creative, and people who are funny. Combine those traits into one person and I may flirt with religious belief. Perhaps the most admirable trait of atheists is their willingness to approach life on its own terms and not to sugarcoat existence. And Daria is a prime example of someone who tries to be her own person, and those who object be damned.
It's a sick, sad world, man.
Sick, sad world.
She is the ultimate cynic and kind of just such a product of the 90s.
Yeah, that show is so 90s.
Yeah.
With her art school haircut, best friend Jane.
So Funny or Die did a Daria Where Are They Now short movie with Aubrey Plaza as Daria Morgendorfer, who is the embodiment of her in our age.
Yeah.
She's the millennial.
Did you watch Daria, Tim?
No, I didn't.
You're not MTV generation.
I've never had cable. So, you know, in the 90s, when you couldn't actually stream a cable show on Netflix or Hulu, you know, I didn't see any cable in the 90s.
For me, like, Daria and My So-Called Life were the two shows where there were girls that I felt actually, like, I felt, even though I was such a goody-goody two-shoes, like, you know, and everything, like, I didn't fit in because of those traits. So, like, I appreciated the... Like, even though it's, like, emotional girl. Claire Danes cry face.
Spinoff from Beavis and Butthead.
Claire Danes cry face.
Google Claire Danes cry face, and you will find a video that is the best thing ever. It's like 5 minutes of Claire Danes crying in various movies.
And most of it's from Homeland, I think. But she has a very distinct cry face, and she uses it in a lot of things she's in.
Claire Danes cry face.
Our third question is, what is your geekiest hobby?
Not the most interesting or unusual geeky hobby in the world, but I love Japanese giant monster movies.
Kaiju.
Ever since I watched the Godzilla Power Hour on Cartoon Network way back in the 90s, I've been a big fan.
Gojira.
And the advent of the internet has made finding the movies way easier. Sure, a lot of them take a long time to get to the giant monster brawls, but feature pretty stock sci-fi plots, but love can look past those things.
That is so true.
The original 1954 Godzilla is a brilliant movie parable, and some of the more modern films are surprisingly accessible. For anyone interested, I'd recommend Gamera the Brave and Godzilla Final Wars as a starting point.
I bet the title is a lie.
Well,
the title of Godzilla Final Wars, I bet you... Total bullshit.
So it's.
Plus, it's always good to have a marginally more socially acceptable excuse to watch Japanese guys dress up in rubber suits and wrestle.
So it's kind of all born from the, like, nuclear scare. I mean, we dropped two nukes on a country, and it kind of fucked them up.
They got weird.
And I think everything
weird in Japan is our fault.
We dropped two nukes on a xenophobic island nation that had been besieged constantly by all of the countries around.
Besieging them. Periods of extreme isolation and xenophobia and two nukes
we just took the blocks away from that rolling car.
So since you sent us these answers, the trailer for the new Godzilla movie went up.
You should comment and tell us what you think.
I think Pacific Rim came out since he sent us. We're a little bit behind, folks.
Have you seen the Godzilla trailer?
I haven't seen it yet.
You see, like, shadows through smoke of Godzilla.
I gotta look it up.
But it starts with, you know, some dudes halo dropping with flares, which kind of defeats the purpose of halo dropping. But, I don't know. I'm excited. I'm gonna see it. I mean, the last Godzilla movie was a piece of shit.
The last Godzilla movie...
Well, I mean, to be fair, the last Godzilla movie produced by Americans.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's
the
fair.
Last American Godzilla movie has what I think is my possibly favorite cover of a Led Zeppelin song
Come with
of all
me
time.
By Puff Daddy.
Yes. Come With Me by Puff Daddy, which has Kashmir punctuated by... Godzilla screams, which
and
is
Puff Daddy going, come with me.
So it's like, I'll let the sun beat down upon my face. And I just about, oh my god, I won that soundtrack from a Mountain Dew cap.
That shows you how popular that soundtrack was. Seriously, all right, question number four. What's your favorite sandwich?
There's a pub in Edinburgh called The Hanging Bat. It's surprisingly non-Gothic. That does two incredible sandwiches. Every time I go, it's like Sophie's choice between the two. One is a simple pulled pork sandwich on a crusty, floury roll, which I usually get with a side of chili beans. You get the pork separately in a little carton, and they give you a ton, so you can really load up the roll and then have some to spare. The other is a Reuben sandwich soft white bread with thin sliced roast beef, melted Swiss cheese, and a heap of sauerkraut. I'd heard tell of such a beast, but I'd never had one until I went to the Bat. Please don't make me choose between them.
See, here's what I'm going to say about, you know, people saying thin sliced corned beef. If it's not thin sliced, it doesn't count.
Had a Reuben with at Kieran's. The way they do their Reuben is with like a corned beef that's kind of just falling apart, like a chunky, chunks of it.
Almost like a piece of roast thrown in there.
No, not a whole piece. It's like chopped, like chopped.
Diced up to almost the same texture as the sauerkraut.
That's okay.
I think it's okay,
Here's the reason. Here's one of the reasons, Tim. When you're biting into a corned beef sandwich where the corned beef is all chopped like that, you're never gonna pull away from a bite with like pull out a whole piece of corned beef.
Then you just eat the corned beef. You just shove it into your mouth.
I know, but then you're taking corned beef away from the rest of your sandwich, and you have like a less balanced next bite.
But Reubens are like 5 inches wide. I mean, one piece of corned beef, if it's cut thin, isn't gonna be a problem.
I've come up with a biblical solution to your sandwich problem, sir.
Oh yeah.
And that is that you must divide the sandwich in two.
I want to split a sandwich.
I get that. That's
two.
Solomon and the mother.
Only it wasn't a sandwich. It was a baby.
That's a dated reference.
Yeah.
And so our fifth and final question is, what's the stupidest thing anyone's ever said to you about your atheism?
Probably the most inane response I've ever had to my atheism is what I called the God checklist.
Oh.
When I say I don't believe in God, I get asked to be more specific and end up having to state for the record that Zeus, Osiris, and Huitzilopochtli, I don't know how to say that one.
Quetzalcoatl,
are also bullshit. While I have met one neo-pagan who believes in the gods of ancient Egypt, I would think that it can usually be taken as a given that no one believes in those anymore. I can't wait to hear my name on the show, as shallow and self-serving as that is.
What's his name again?
John Miller! Keep up the good work, guys. I absolutely adore your stuff. A special thank you for making me laugh out loud in the street and causing certain of my neighbors to think I'm a dangerous lunatic. John in Edinburgh.
I think, because John said he likes swearing.
Yeah.
And he might be, like, walking through the street while listening to this.
Yeah,
I wish just, like, swear for a few seconds.
Fuck! Arse! Cunt. Girls!
Fuck. Yeah. Fuckface!
Kick me in the ass, you motherfucking cocksucker!
Yeah, cock smoking whore.
Stick your shit cock up my cunt hole.
There we go.
Whoa, no. Got serious. All right. So those swear words were for you.
Congratulations, John.
Fuck my lard pussy.
No, that's not good. No, that's not good.
Yeah. I'm not good at dirty talk.
Well,
well it's the Percocet, really.
Yeah, sure. We'll say this.
I said this to Molly earlier, but I love Molly, when she's on all these drugs, she talks slower, and I can tell it's because her brain's kind of going, I need to make sure that these are actual words that other human beings will understand.
Yeah, I was saying earlier tonight, I can completely see how people get addicted to Percocet, because when I first took it, and I'd never taken it before, so when I first took it, I got real, like, kind of spacey, dreamy, and it was like, oh, and then I fell asleep right away. And then the next time, spacey, dreamy, and it's spacey, dreamy for about a week.
Yeah.
And now I'm on the second week, and I don't get that spacey, dreamy. If you listen to the podcast with Carr Hagerman, you'll notice I'm talking a lot differently.
You are.
That was not that many days ago.
Build up a little resistance.
No, exactly. And so I think if what you like is that feeling, you're probably thinking, I should take two pills. And then a week later, you're like, oh, I probably need to take three. And now you're addicted to narcotics. So
real quick, funny story. When Molly was in the hospital and they had her hooked up to IV drugs, no fewer than three times did she say, with a nurse or doctor, medical professional in the room, she said to me, you know what? I don't really understand what the big deal is about people getting addicted to painkillers. I mean, or some comment about being drug-seeking or about heroin. You, two times of the three, you mentioned heroin specifically. And I'm like, maybe don't talk about doing heroin in front of the nurse.
See,
I mean, I know
heroin,
you're
not. Hey.
See, yeah. That's how they know that you don't do heroin. Because you just wouldn't even, because if you did heroin.
People who do heroin wouldn't talk about heroin in the hospital.
Well, right, but it was just... It was like, man, for someone who's not very concerned about it, you sure are bringing it up.
They gave me an IV because I was in literally the worst pain I've ever felt in my life, and I've broken bones. So they gave me IV Valium and IV Percocet, and it was like I felt it, and it was like, oh, was it Dilaudid?
Yeah.
Oh, and I was like. Oh, like all of a sudden when it hit me, that was right when Nick came in, and I was like, yay, Nick's here.
Yeah, so.
Anyway. Thank you, John.
Yeah, thanks, John. We have been Geeks Without God. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and as always, please send us your five answers to our five questions to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com.
We'll get to them in about 6 months.
Well, I know that's actually the thing. It seems like we're behind, but we're catching up fast. We're running out.
So we're running out of them. We have a few to go for sure, but we could use some more, obviously. And
one more note. If you come up and introduce yourselves to us and say, hey, blah, 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 I listen to your podcast, please tell me your name, because I'm really bad at asking people their names. So.
Right. Oh, and... quick shout out to the gentleman who came up and said hello to Tim in the previous
Vilification Tennis Show.
Suck it, Tim. He said hi to us.
Tim wasn't there at the last show, and we were, and he said hi to us, and he gave us his handwritten five answers.
The thing is that I'm a lot less intimidating than you guys.
I'm more approachable.
Because
he knows
Edgar.
Who the talent is.
His name's Edgar.
Edgar, right. So hi, Edgar. And we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Adios. No, seriously, feel my dick.
Whoa, that is hard.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at @geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
Vaya con Dios,
muchachos.